This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark. And today on The Breakfast Grill, I have Jason Newman, Vice President of Quacquarelli Simmons, the group behind QS University Rankings. Welcome to the show, Jason. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
So in your latest QS World University Rankings, I noticed that US universities particularly didn't do very well, although the top three places are still going to MIT, Stanford, and Harvard. Nearly 73% of American universities actually saw a drop in the rankings. Perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about why.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, there are a number of reasons why universities will go down as mm-hmm. much as going up. But the reality is that you've got to look at this as a metric system. As one goes up, one goes down. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the rankings is around the work that institutions do to work within the methodology and delivering the data that would actually be provided there. So things like consistency around citations in publications, that will still be coming through very strong. Reputation is a very big part of the QS ranking mm-hmm. methodology. And I think what we're seeing is a big shift around the world in terms of the outputs of universities. So particularly here in Asia, we're seeing a rise in the Asian institutions in our regional rankings as well as the global rankings. And you can put that down to a lot of hard work and focus. Rankings are quite important to many institutions around the globe. And obviously, as one goes up, the scenario will be that that will have a crescendo effect on other institutions.
And you mentioned reputation, which mm-hmm. is one of the main metrics of the university rankings. But how does one actually quantify reputation in this respect?
Well, I mean, we actually conduct the largest academic survey of mm-hmm. academics around the world. So we have 94,000 completed surveys. That is a global mix of academics around the planet. And that is a comprehensive survey that an individual will take upon themselves to complete, submit that through our system, and the questions that are answered throughout that survey will actually then be formulated into the outputs in reputation. If you look at that, it's the single largest indicator with a 40% weighting.
Yeah. But then my question then would be, wouldn't this be naturally biased against smaller institutions, for example, perhaps universities that don't necessarily have the resources in order to invest in building a brand name to rival the ones like Harvard, Stanford, and MIT?
One could argue that. And obviously, we do now create regional rankings and country-focused rankings mm-hmm. because we recognize that perfect methodology does not exist.
Right.
We have a metric now that has existed now for over 15 years, and its consistency is important for all stakeholders, be it institutions, but our number one stakeholder will always be students. So if you made a decision based on a QS ranking or that formulated part of your decision-making in, let's say, 5 years ago, and then we changed the methodology dramatically, the impact could be quite negative on the institution you selected. So we have to be very careful on how we manipulate that data. But when you're looking at reputation impacts for smaller institutions, hence the reason we've now created regional rankings. Mm-hmm. For those that may not appear in the global ranking, we do have the regional rankings, as I said. So for Asia, for Latin America, the Arab region, and we also have a ranking now for Central Asia and Eastern Europe.
So when it comes to survey respondents in this, academics and experts, where are they generally located?
It is. I mean, I don't have the breakdowns right now, mm-hmm. but it's a complete global mix. So the surveys, as I say, we've got 94,000 completed surveys. They're not, and if there is an oversubscription from certain parts of the world, then there will be a damping exercise. It's also really important to understand that an individual academic cannot nominate their own institution.
Right.
And also, while we're talking of reputation, we also factor in the employer opinion. So we do actually have a 10% weighting based on the employer reputation. So again, we have a survey, not quite as large. We have about 44,000 completed surveys from the employer sector. That's HR directors and those involved in the hiring of staff and mm-hmm. graduates. And we're the only ranking, I believe, that we actually take into account the opinion of the employer.
And was this your attempt to essentially gauge a graduate employability from individual institutions? What goes into employer reputation?
So employer, I mean, again, it's a survey. So
yeah.
It's a survey, a global survey of employers around the world. But in essence, what we believe from the offset was that, not in all cases, but generally speaking, students are going to university to better their career opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that, careers are very closely linked and aligned with what employers are thinking. So we feel that it's really important for us to create a methodology that actually takes into account what employers are thinking and saying. Hence the reason we have that in this survey.
So I'd also like just your take on some of the other trends that we've seen emerging from the QS University rankings, mm-hmm. which was that universities in China and Australia are on the rise. And as you mentioned, it is kind of a balance. While one sector maybe may not perform as well, mm-hmm. other sectors are performing better. So do you see this kind of trend continuing, this shift in focus towards universities in China and Australia?
That I can't give you a complete picture on that because we don't have the complete picture.
Do you have an indication?
What I would suggest, and there's only a suggestion here, but if you look around what's happening in the geopolitical climate, I mean, I don't have the research to back it up, but one may decide that we're looking at a situation where reputation perhaps is impacted by geopolitical situations. Mm-hmm. So we have things like Brexit in the UK. Is that impacting on the reputation of UK universities in our reputation surveys? I don't have the answers yet, but I suspect that some of this is starting to play and fall into place. At the same time, you do have the rise of China. China is really on the move. It is developing itself as an education hub. It is investing in its institutions. Their research outputs are growing massively. And you're finding yourselves in that has impact globally. And of course, when you look at countries like you mentioned, Australia, I mean, Australia is a very, very aggressive nation in terms of its outputs in education. So when we're looking at what they're doing in the research space, when we look at what they're doing in reputation, I mean, I work very closely with the Australian sector, and I mean, they are very, very internationalized already. They're on the world map, and they are, relatively speaking, I guess, part of that nature comes from an isolation in terms of geographic location, and they're push the envelope for a country of its size. You see a lot of Australian academics and international staff around the globe. So I think that some institutions, some countries, some organisations, some groups within universities are really upping their game in their activities globally.
Okay. Now, aside from the university rankings, of course, QS also conducts education fairs, mm-hmm, so to speak, around the world. So the QS Connect Masters as well as the QS MBA Tour, and these are held all over the world. So perhaps you could give us some insight into what kind of participation you see, perhaps in different areas, in different regions, how they differ, and how perhaps they've changed over time as well.
To be brutally honest, I don't work directly on the student recruitment fairs. I have done. So my tenure on the recruitment fairs probably came to an end about 6 years ago. But obviously, I'm very close to what happens across the business. So, I mean, student recruitment fairs, I think there's been a question mark around the value of fairs, mm-hmm. as we move into a digitized globe. But what we're finding is that still students need that interaction. So generally speaking, people actually want to meet people. They want to actually have a conversation, have some FaceTime. Of course, lots of interviews now take place online, but the trend, we're not seeing a downturn in numbers attending fairs. In fact, we're seeing an increase in specific markets.
And so, those markets being?
Well, I think Asia still particularly will be very, very heavy in that area. Latin America is another region that you'll see a lot of activity. And then you're looking at some of the specialized areas, as you mentioned, MBAs, where you're going to find, again, consistency in some of the sort of developed nations like the United States, the UK, etc., where some of the qualifications being promoted by the institutions are still held in high value.
But MBA applications around the world are also falling, particularly, especially now since you've got the rise of online courses, so which offer a lot more flexibility than an MBA from a physical university would. So what has been the response to the QS MBA tours? Have you seen that corresponding drop-off in applications?
I couldn't give you an absolute an answer on that. I don't have that information. But I do know that what we do is innovate. QS is constantly innovating what we do. So now creating things like you mentioned, the one-to-one MBA. So we have the opportunity now for institutions to not only come to a student fair, but universities can now actually select candidates and interview, and a candidate can select institutions that they wish to interview with on the day at the fair. Mm-hmm. That is still a very attractive proposition. But in terms of the real numbers and where the shifts are, I don't actually have that information, I'm afraid.
Okay. So QS has offices now in Singapore, Malaysia, Australia, as well as in Europe and the UK and the US. But are there plans at the moment to perhaps grow your presence here in Asia, considering, as you described yourself, like China, for example, is a growing market. They've invested quite heavily in their students. They're one of the biggest student exporters in the world as well. So are there plans to build up your presence in this region?
At the moment, I'm not aware of any plans for China specifically, but if you talk about Asia, the investment QS has placed in Asia has been vast in the last few years. QS acquired a company called Hobson's be 2 years in this October, and it had been part of our drive to increase our presence in the student recruitment space. The opportunity arose, and we found that part of that process had always been around the quality of staff. That's very important for QS. And Malaysia, the Malaysian office, already had a very good outfit, a very good operation. But the fact is that Malaysia is an area we're going to invest in because we know we've got high-quality candidates coming through the education system here that are more than employable. So we're more than happy to continue that investment and grow our operation here in Malaysia. So investment in terms of expansion, I'm not aware of any concrete plans. But of course, as an organisation that has got a very global reach, we will obviously consider all options.
So I'm also curious as to how you maintain an edge against a competition. Like, who are your competitors in this space that you see, particularly within the Asian region?
Right. It's a good question. And because QS is such a vast portfolio, it's difficult for me to give you one main or two main competitors because in different verticals, we'll have different competitors.
Yeah. So, for example, just specifically looking at the university ranking system itself, because right now, when you think about university rankings, you do think about the QS World University Rankings, but this is not a proprietary system. So how are you hedging against a potential competitors that may be coming up in the market? Like, for example, the Times Higher Education Survey.
Yep.
So how do you maintain your position in that respect?
So I think it's always about, again, innovation, developing new systems, and looking at who are the stakeholders. You know, because we have stakeholders that are students, their parents, education agents will be stakeholders, and of course the institutions themselves. So where we are innovating is and drawing our experience from is building out things like our subject rankings. So not only do we rank universities in a global context, and as I mentioned before, in a regional and also by country, but we now produce over 48 separate subject rankings as well as faculty-led rankings. So I think this is where we become open to more people on their education journey. So perhaps, and I'm just making a suggestion, that in some parts of the world you will see an attraction towards the World University Rankings, perhaps at degree level. When we start to look at master's level, perhaps people are looking more at specific subject areas where they actually want to go and study in that space. So there are always going to be differences around the globe in terms of the way people consume and use rankings, and QS will always advocate that rankings are used in conjunction with other ways of making a decision. It's not the ultimate decision-making process.
So I suppose if there is a space for QS to expand, it would be in broadening perhaps your subject scope of your rankings.
We will always look to do that. I mean, that's something that we look to do too. But every time you look at a ranking, to make it comprehensive and make it complete, you need to be sure that there's enough data globally. And data you can obtain from an institution perhaps here in Malaysia may be different to the data you could collect from an institution in another part of the world, a developing part of the world. So we have to make ourselves comprehensive and international, which is what QS is. Then we obviously have to be sure there's data available.
I'm speaking to Jason Newman, Vice President of Quaccarelli Simmons, the group behind QS University Rankings, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with Jason Newman, Vice President of Quaccarelli Simmons. Now, earlier we were talking about the QS University Rankings, but now let's take a look as well at QS as a business. How would you define Quaccarelli Simmons as a company? Are you geared more towards producing university rankings, or are you geared more towards perhaps providing sort of consultancy services? Because I noticed that that was a thing that QS is involved in, leveraging on the data that you collect from students and giving these insights to universities themselves. So which would you say is the main portion of the business?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess my view from where I sit is it's pretty much split down the middle. You know, student recruitment services is an integral part, and that's what QS was born out of. So that's where our founder created the World MBA Tour, the MBA Career Guide. So that's really where we formed our business started, which is now coming up to 30 years since the company was launched. Student recruitment services are probably still 50% or higher of our business. Mm-hmm. So that's student recruitment fairs. We have our websites, our web portals, which are delivering information, core information to students. We have a matching tool on those websites so an individual can go online and put in their requirements, perhaps country of preference. If rankings is important, there's different metrics they can put into that system. And that enables them to then get a selective a list of potential institutions they may want to consider. When you look at the other avenues of business, obviously we do have our enrollment solutions. So that's where we work with universities to help them in the conversion of students into enrollments. Mm-hmm. But then you move more around the B2B area of what QS does. So B2C would be our student recruitment facing area. So although we are still working with universities, it is all about the consumer, the end user. On the B2B side of the business, we'll be looking at probably things around rankings, mm-hmm. so analytics, so giving insights into performance in certain metrics within the rankings. Institutions are always interested to find out more about how their performance is. And if you consider things like the QS reputation surveys, beyond rankings, universities, generally speaking, are interested to hear what their reputation is academically. And from an employer perspective, in this growing space at the moment, there's a lot of interest and a lot of talk and a lot of noise around the employability of students. So we have systems in place that enable institutions to actually get access and gain access to the performance of their institution in our reputation surveys.
And where exactly is the revenue stream in this? How do you monetize these businesses? Because is it from the education fairs? Is it from perhaps charging a vendor fee? Or is it mainly from the data analytics that you described?
Revenue splits across the business will be between student recruitment and other activities. So, of course, if you take into any activity, for us to actually organize a recruitment fair, we need to book a hotel in downtown Kuala Lumpur. We need to cater it. We need to promote it and market it. So there will be a fee that an institution will pay to actually have access to that event. And obviously what they're looking to do is then meet with students that may potentially enroll and become a fee-paying student onto their program. The same will be said from a rankings context or other activities that we do in that space. They're very, very resource intensive. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of staff it takes across the globe to collect the data, crunch that data, produce the outputs, maintain websites that enable us to actually then present that data and those findings to the world. So behind that machine, there's an awful lot of expense. So actually driving revenues would come from areas where institutions are interested in finding out about their performance, or they may want to actually advertise and promote themselves on a website that is attracting over 70 million individuals looking at those rankings online in any 12-month period. So clearly if universities want to present themselves or want to get their brand out to student-facing, which universities are constantly evolving and doing, trying to market themselves to students, then that would be another avenue they could choose with QS.
How do you assure the public of your independence then? Because obviously you are a business and you do have to make money, but there may be some concern over the crossover in terms of is this money going towards a better place in the rankings, for example?
Right. I mean, if I had a pound for every time or a dollar every time someone has suggested that, I would have paid my mortgage off a long time ago. Unfortunately, that's not the way it works. And QS is not an organization. I mean, we pride ourselves on our independence. We pride ourselves on our integrity. And after 15 years of working in rankings, we've not been exposed for anything that people may suggest. I mean, we are a very, very serious business that works within the realms of our methodology, but nobody can pay to climb a ranking. Of course, an institution could look at developing strategy around data that's either publicly available or information that may be available from QS. But that information is only provided as data. So in terms of developing strategies, and universities have many strategies in this space as well.
Hmm. You did mention that the rankings are not the be-all and end-all of any decision mm-hmm. Towards eventually choosing a university. But when you're bringing together details of universities may become lost in translation. Is this something that might be concerning?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. Mm-hmm. I personally feel that what rankings are doing are, and what we hope, as I reinforce that message, that you know we hope that students and parents will actually utilize rankings in a sensible fashion. And by that, we mean you're going to be looking at, you know, where do you start if you don't have a list? Mm-hmm. Where do you start when you're looking to send your child to a school, let's say, a K-12 level? And if we're talking about international education, we are talking about an investment. ultimately, these exercises to put your child or to put yourself for an international study does not come cheap, as we all know. So individuals are looking for guidance on where to choose. So, of course, before they even look at a QS ranking or other rankings for that matter, they may have decided the country they wish to study in. So I'd question, what is that based on? If you select the UK, there may be a general consensus that that's down to the quality of education. Now, I'm sure it is, and absolutely, there's a great quality of education, but is every education provider the same? Is it equal? So that's where we try to create a list. And when we're looking at the internationalization of higher education across the globe, it's really important, I think, to have a metric in place. And we do publish all of our methodology online. Everything's available on our website. And as I say, we try not to advocate ever just to use rankings in isolation. It should be part of that formulation and that process of decision-making.
Now, Jason, so the education system on a more global scale is potentially facing a crisis. So student loan debts, for example, are skyrocketing in the US, the UK, even here in Asia. It's kind of a knock-on effect, right? So this leads to a lower quality education, the rising commoditization of the higher education sphere, as well as essentially negatively impacting the reputations of higher education institutions. And if this continues and it doesn't look good for higher learning institutions as a whole, where does that put a QS?
You know, so things that you've just mentioned, I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't take it quite to the level of your statement, but I certainly would concur that there are employability concerns and employment outcomes. And I think that's really critical to the reason why many people go to university. Mm-hmm. Many people go to invest because they want to invest in their future.
Yep.
And that may be their career and developing that career. So there's a number of factors at play. But, you know, as a reaction to that, QS has actually invested in developing a methodology to create a graduate employability ranking. So we're actually looking at the employment outcomes now and actually asking institutions to provide data to support that. And what does that create? Well, I believe that actually creates a situation where universities are actually needing to think more about the employment outcomes, their careers offices investing in that space, but also working with employers. Because what is it? What employment skills? And maybe we don't have the answer, but it'd be great if we could get the answer in 5 or 10 years' time. What are the employment needs going to be for a country or a region? And then be able to develop programs around the employment needs. So I think we are going to go through some really interesting changes over the course of the next few decades, and particularly look at things like how AI and other technologies are coming into place and putting pressure probably on the employment space. But I still believe that will create new opportunity.
Thank you very much for your time, Jason. I've been speaking to Jason Newman, Vice President of Quacquarelli Simmons, the group behind QS University Rankings. I'm Lynn Mark for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, now with wider 4G LTE reach. Baru la bes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.